Chapter 1. In which the reader is introduced to a man of humanity. Late in the afternoon of a chilly day in February, two gentlemen were sitting alone over their wine in a well-furnished dining-parlor in the town of P. in Kentucky. There were no servants present, and the gentlemen, with chairs closely approaching, seemed to be discussing some subject with great earnestness. For convenience sake we have said hitherto two gentlemen. One of the parties, however, when critically examined, did not seem, strictly speaking, to come under the species. He was a short, thick-set man, with coarse, commonplace features, and that swaggering air of pretension which marks a low man who is trying to elbow his way upward in the world. He was much overdressed, in a gaudy vest of many colors, a blue neckerchief, bedropped gaily with yellow spots, and arranged with a flaunting tie, quite in keeping with the general air of the man. His hands, large and coarse, were plentifully bedecked with rings, and he wore a heavy gold watch-chain, with a bundle of seals of portentous size, and a great variety of colors attached to it, which, in the ardor of conversation, he was in the habit of flourishing and jingling with evident satisfaction. His conversation was in free and easy defiance of Murray's grammar, English Grammar, 1795, by Lindley Murray, 1745-1826, the most authoritative American grammarian of his day, and was garnished at convenient intervals with various profane expressions, which not even the desire to be graphic in our account shall induce us to transcribe. His companion, Mr. Shelby, had the appearance of a gentleman, and the arrangements of the house and the general air of the housekeeping indicated easy and even opulent circumstances. As we before stated, the two were in the midst of an earnest conversation. "That is the way I should arrange the matter," said Mr. Shelby.
"I can't make trade that way. I positively can't, Mr. Shelby," said the other, holding up a glass of wine between his eye and the light. "Why, the fact is, Haley, Tom is an uncommon fellow. He is certainly worth that sum anywhere. Steady, honest, capable, manages my whole farm like a clock."
"You mean honest as niggers go," said Haley, helping himself to a glass of brandy.
"No, I mean, really, Tom is a good, steady, sensible, pious fellow. He got religion at a camp-meeting 4 years ago, and I believe he really did get it. I've trusted him, since then, with everything I have—money, house, horses—and let him come and go round the country, and I always found him true and square in everything."
"Some folks don't believe there is pious niggers, Shelby," said Haley, with a candid flourish of his hand. "But I do. I had a fellow, now, in this yer last lot I took to Orleans. 'Twas as good as a meetin', now, really, to hear that critter pray, and he was quite gentle and quiet-like. He fetched me a good sum, too, for I bought him cheap of a man that was obliged to sell out, so I realized 600 on him. Yes, I consider religion a valuable thing in a nigger, when it's the genuine article, and no mistake."
"Well, Tom's got the real article, if ever a fellow had," rejoined the other. "Why, last fall I let him go to Cincinnati alone, to do business for me, and bring home $500. "Tom," says I to him, "I trust you, because I think you're a Christian. I know you wouldn't cheat." Tom comes back, sure enough. I knew he would. Some low fellows, they say, said to him, "Tom, why don't you make tracks for Canada?" Master trusted me, and I couldn't. They told me about it. I am sorry to part with Tom, I must say. You ought to let him cover the whole balance of the debt, and you would, Haley, if you had any conscience."
"Well, I've got just as much conscience as any man in business can afford to keep. Just a little, you know, to swear by, as 'twere," said the trader jocularly. "And then I'm ready to do anything in reason to oblige friends. But this, you see, is a leetle too hard on a fellow. A leetle too hard."
The trader sighed contemplatively and poured out some more brandy. "Well, then, Haley, how will you trade?" said Mr. Shelby, after an uneasy interval of silence.
"Well, haven't